I stink as a music teacher, but yet it's my best in 18 years. Back in a moment.
Strike up the band, so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine. The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
I know that I'm getting better as a music teacher, but there's some things that I kind of let slack off this year, and maybe you've done the same thing. I think in my quest for numbers, when I first started here at Falcon High School 11 years ago, I had 42 in band, 10 in orchestra, so I had about 50 music students, not including my guitar class. That's always been my biggest class. I think I had 30 in guitar that first year. But now I've got about 150 instrumental music students plus my guitar class, and those numbers range anywhere from 30 to 70, depending on what's going on. Yet I kind of let discipline slack off in my rehearsals this year in that quest for numbers. And I should know better. I've been teaching for 18 years. I've been in the music field for 30 years. But it's something that can happen to all of us. I came in right after spring break, actually right before spring break, and I just kind of raised the bar of expectation in my rehearsals. And this was something, I actually had these rules already, but I just wasn't enforcing them like I should have. So I want to give you 5 tips for more efficient rehearsals. These are tips, of course, this list is not exhaustive, but these are the tips that of things that I really focus on that really help bring my rehearsal to the next level. And for a lot of these things, it's finding the right balance. Tip number 1, no cell phones ever, and not on stands especially. I'm a trusting person, and I had several students who had their cell phones on their stands, and they said, well, I'm just keeping it there, but I'm not using it. And I would kind of try to catch them using it, and I was never able to catch them using it. I had a guest come in, and he said, boy, you had several students. They just were like right on that cell phone as soon as you looked in the other direction. So it was good to have an extra set of eyes. It was kind of embarrassing for me because I really didn't want to have a colleague of mine notice something like that. But on the other hand, sometimes an extra set of eyes will take us to the next level. So I came in the very next day in rehearsal, and I let them know that there's no cell phones on your stands, and that would no longer be allowed, and even if I saw it on a stand, I would take it. Well, I had one student in tears that day because I took her cell phone. And a lot of students these days are so glued to every notification that they receive, and the drama that happens in the lunchroom is just continuing on in the band room, that the cell phone just makes it even worse. So this has been a good move for me. No cell phones ever on stands or out at all. Rule number 2, no talking ever. Okay, almost never. Once you get past about 10 students in a room, it becomes chaotic to have students supply answers and feedback without them raising their hands. It doesn't matter if it's a youth group, if it's an adult group, if it's small children, if it's big children, if it's a group of administrators. Once you get past about 8 or 10, you just need some kind of system for deciding who's going to speak. It could be raised hand. It could be the person who wants to speak stands up. I often do student-led rehearsals, and I'll be doing a podcast on that at some point, and that's what they do for the student-led rehearsals. They stand and provide their input. Now, I really have to use judgment and find the right balance in this, because although my rule is no talking ever, and I emphasize almost, sometimes someone is helping someone with a fingering or something related to the music, and I just kind of have to use my judgment for that. Tip number 3, and something that I just incorporated after having my guest come, is that it wasn't always clear for students when the next phase of rehearsal would take place, especially if we were moving between pieces and I gave them a little 1 or 2 minute break. Now, we have block classes, so the students have 90 minutes with me every other day. And so to have 90 minutes of intense focus is really difficult to do. So we usually have a 1 minute break in there when we're switching between songs or switching between tasks. So my rule is that when I step up on the podium, everyone stands. And this makes it clear that now we're moving to the next song. Everybody stops talking and stops playing during that time. And that has worked out really well. So in the time of a 90-minute rehearsal, I do this about 3 or 4 times. We immediately go into our warm-ups, or as I prefer to call it, as Dr. Kramer called it, is ensemble sensitivity training. We spend about 20 minutes doing that. Then I give them a short break, about a minute, as we move to the next song. I stand on the podium. Everybody stands, and that makes it clear that we're moving on to the next thing. Tip number 4, you waste my time, I waste yours. I come from a military background. I spent 10 years in the military band in Virginia, Japan, and ended up here in Colorado. And so I was using push-ups as a means of discipline. And, you know, if it had worked, I may have continued it. But after talking to my colleague who came and gave me the feedback, he suggested getting away from that immediately. And so I took his advice after I thought about it that night. And I thought that it's not working at all. All it's doing is there's about 2 or 3 students in each class who have gotten really strong, and the push-ups don't phase them anymore. But it didn't eliminate the behavior. And sometimes it bugs me that I let myself get to that point. Because we should all know, and I should know by 18 years of teaching, that if something's not working, I have to change it. And the push-ups definitely were not working. Right now, what is working for me, and this might be different for you, but for me, it's just like if you waste rehearsal time, you're affecting the 40 other people who are in this class who are wanting to learn. You've just wasted, if you wasted 15 seconds, you've wasted 40 people's time times 15 seconds. So that comes out to actually 10 minutes of wasted time by being disruptive for 15 seconds. So what I do is I start with a 5-minute lunch detention. And students hate having their time taken away. And I don't make a big deal about it. I don't get mad at the student. It's just like, you wasted rehearsal time. You owe me 5 minutes. And right now that is seeming to be pretty effective. I've had to issue about 4 or 5 of these. And then it's tapered off to where nobody has needed one. This is about 3 weeks of incorporating this new policy. On trips, when we need to get back to the bus, I do something that has been very effective for 11 years. In 11 years, I've only had to issue this consequence to 3 students, one of whom was my own son who was in band a number of years ago before he graduated. And that's for every minute you're late. If we're getting back on the bus at 1, we stopped for lunch somewhere and you need to be back on the bus at 1, for every minute that you're late, you're going to owe me 5 minutes of either after school or lunch detention. What I did on one trip, it was an overnight trip, they owed me that time. They were about 3 minutes late, the 3 students, so they owed me 15 minutes. And we just sat on the bus at the next break, which was dinner that same day, and they had to wait 15 minutes before they could join their friends. You would have thought they had a 20-year prison sentence, and that's the only time I've ever had to incorporate that in 11 years of day and overnight trips. So the students are usually there 2 minutes before the final time. The final tip is playing quizzes. I was finding myself giving too many chances. I would give a playing quiz and the students could, if they didn't get it by the 3rd time that I tested them on it, then I just told them they had to task it in that section and they couldn't play. Well, a lot of them were okay with that. It's like, fine, I didn't really want to play that anyway. I don't want to work to improve it. All I changed in that is that now it counts as a grade. It goes in the grade book. And with all the other tests and assessments we have in the concerts, if they fail one playing quiz, it's not going to dramatically affect their grade. But if they have a string of times where they're not passing their playing quizzes, then it's going to affect their letter grade pretty vitally, especially if we get to the third or fourth playing quiz. What I'm finding is that a lot more students are now rising to the expectation of what I have for them with the playing quizzes. In these tips, keep in mind that relationship is vital. I once worked with a middle school teacher named Amos White. He taught math, I believe, and I learned a lot about discipline from him, especially about separating the discipline from the relationship. So he would talk to a student and he'd say, here's your detention slip. You know why I'm giving you this, because you talked back in class or you did such and such. Here's your detention slip, and I will expect you to serve that today. Now, let's go play some basketball. And the kids would be on a break, and he would go play basketball with them, and he never mentioned the detention again. Whereas I, at that time, would be like so emotional, like, didn't I tell you not to do that? I told you that if you did that, you'd get a detention, and now you went ahead and did it, and now I have to give you a detention. And it just was like really emotional for me. And I could see the eyes roll back in the student's head, and it just wasn't working. The students were just tuning me out. And so I learned from Amos about how to administer the consequences without it severing the relationship, or without me whining about it, is basically what it came to. So this has been a time, the last month or so especially, but we need to do this all the time, of looking in the mirror. Now, I say it was my I stink as a teacher, but it's my best in 18 years. I needed to see this part of it too. I looked at some pictures from 2010. I found a poster or two behind a filing cabinet, and I decided to put those pictures up. And as I looked at that, that was about 5 years into my tenure here. I've been here 11 years now at this school. And I looked at the students who were in my top group at the time, and most of them would be in my third group now if they were in band today. So there has been a lot that has taken place, but there's a lot that I can push my students to take it to the next level. Because no matter where we're at, we can always take things to the next level. As I look at my graduating seniors of this year, I have about 16 seniors, and 4 out of those 16 are planning on going to college and majoring in music ed. So that really excites me. So I know some great things are happening. I just needed to kind of retool and take things to the next level. I hope that these 5 tips are a help to you. I want to mention I'm speaking at 2 conferences this year, sharing my keynote address of how band saved my life. One is at the American School Band Directors Association, and one is at the Colorado String Teachers Association, hoping to also share it at the PACE conference in Colorado in June. If you have a need for a keynote speaker at your event, your music event, please get in touch with me through my website, jamesdevine.net, and let's see if we can work something out.
The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band.